From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Following a spike in cases, U of I has disciplined over 100 students. Two have been suspended.
We believe taking swift actions to identify and remove students who refuse to follow our safety guideline is the right decision.
There are dormitories, Greek houses, that have more than 10% of their residents that are currently positive.
On our campuses in Illinois, you know, I've been very clear that we need to make sure that people are focused on testing, that we've got a plan on each campus, and that where there are kids who, you know, are sick or are suspected to have COVID-19, that there's a way to isolate them. And the universities, I have to say, are working very hard to do the right thing.
Because of what we're announcing today, I remain very, very hopeful and optimistic that we will continue to be able to move forward with this hybrid version of education.
That's University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign Chancellor Robert Jones. We also heard from Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Champaign-Urbana public health epidemiologist Awais Vaid. A week ago, it appeared the U of I had found the key to keeping kids in class and on campus during the pandemic with a saliva test that was labeled a game changer. This week, it's a bit of a different story, with the number of cases on the rise there. It's happening on other campuses as well. We'll talk about that and younger students beginning the school year in different ways. A lot of them are learning remotely. We'll have all of that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel, practicing social distancing from his home, we have Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us this week, we have three public radio reporters from around the state. From Illinois Newsroom in Urbana, we have Lee Gaines. Lee, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be here.
From WNIJ in DeKalb, reporter Peter Medlin. Peter, it's good to have you along as well.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
And from WGLT in Normal, Dana Vollmer. Dana, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you all.
Well, let me start with you, Charlie. We'll get to the education discussion in a moment, but there was some action from the legislature this week, the House specifically. Three Republicans, including the House Republican leader Jim Durkin, filed a petition creating a committee to investigate the Illinois House Speaker and Democrat Michael Madigan. And while he's not been charged, his name has come up as part of a federal investigation into Commonwealth Edison. The utility says Madigan was part of a scheme in which jobs and contracts were awarded to Madigan Associates in exchange for help with legislation. Madigan has denied wrongdoing, but three Republicans, three Democrats will be put on this panel. Charlie, this is a rare move, only used a couple of times in the last two decades or so. How will this work?
The Republicans on Monday morning filed with the House clerk a petition for a 9-page document laying out the summary of the charges that were brought against Commonwealth Edison, giving jobs, contracts, hiring interns, things related to a person that was identified as being House Speaker Michael Madigan. And the document from the Republicans recounted these things, recounted the fact that the federal government, the U.S. attorney, has also requested any number of other documents and materials from the Speaker's office. And they've concluded that ComEd, in its agreement with the feds, admitted to participating in a 9-year bribery scheme for the benefit of Madigan. The agreement with the feds details multiple instances and examples of Madigan's involvement in the scheme. And so they say, in requesting this petition, they request that an investigative committee be appointed to investigate the, quoting here, the Madigan/ComEd bribery scheme, close quote, determine what discipline against Speaker Madigan is needed, if any. Now, this was filed by Jim Durkin, who's the House Republican leader, and two downstate Republicans, Brian Spain from Peoria, Andrew Chesney from Freeport. Under the rules of the House, when this kind of a petition is put forward with the signatures of at least three members, a committee is set up. Normally, Madigan, as the Speaker, would appoint the Democrats, and Durkin, of course, would appoint the Republicans. Well, Madigan recused himself and Majority Leader Greg Harris named the committee. And the committee has equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans, three each. The committee will have hearings, they'll investigate these charges, and if they find that any of these warrant any kind of action, then by a majority vote, there would have to be a bipartisan agreement. The next step would be that the findings from this initial committee would go to a second committee, a special investigative committee.
We'll leave it there for now because we'll continue to follow this as it develops over the next weeks and months. But I do want to move on to another discussion, and that is something a lot of people have been waiting for, and that was the start of school, both on college campuses and local kindergarten through high schools, and seeing what was going to happen there amid the coronavirus. We'll begin on college campuses. Lee Gaines, you're at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. There seemed to be a feeling as though things were going to be the golden ticket, basically, with this saliva test, quick turnaround, was going to be able to watch for outbreaks and catch those rather quickly. But what has happened there since? It seems like things have gone off the rails a little bit over the last several days.
Yeah, I will say, though, that there is still a feeling among university administrators here that the SHIELD program, this mass testing program where they're testing staff, students, faculty, twice a week, that this is actually still working, that the program hasn't failed. But what essentially has happened is that researchers modeled data for the university, claiming in that data that there would be about 700 cases of COVID-19 for the entire semester. And right now we're only a few weeks in and we're already at about 1,200 cases. And so when the numbers started coming back like that, when we started seeing these increases in COVID-19 cases being identified, that's when I think the university realized that it needed to come out and say something. And so basically what the modelers have said is that their modeling of this disease did take into account, that students would party, that they wouldn't always wear a mask. But what it didn't take into account, they say, is some of this willful violation of the rules. So students who have tested positive for COVID-19, not isolating and going out into public, trying to get retested to get a better result. We've also had students, this is according to the university, who have COVID-19, who are hosting and going to parties, things like that, students that are actively evading the contact tracers who are working at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, not picking up their calls, not cooperating with them. And according to these modelers, it doesn't take very many students breaking the rules to have a drastic impact on the numbers. So far, though, there's no evidence that students are transmitting this virus to the wider community, so people outside the immediate student community. And what Awais Vaid with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District said recently is that the infections are really clustered in about 10 to 15 residences, private residences, and Greek houses, so fraternities and sororities. And in some of those houses, more than 10% of the inhabitants have COVID-19, which I thought was really striking when he said that. But at the same time, the university researchers, there's an epidemiologist here, Becky Smith, who says, look, the U of I, we have a lot of cases compared to other schools, yes, but what we're doing is unique. We're testing everyone multiple times a week, regardless of whether or not they have symptoms. And so we're seeing the iceberg, whereas these other universities who are only, testing here and there are just seeing the tip of that iceberg. So they're confident that they caught this problem early, but they're putting the responsibility for fixing it, for reversing this trend, on the shoulders of the students.
And Lee, I think that was the other thing that jumped out to me this week, was how the university sort of came out and like you said, they almost targeted students, shaming them in some way for some of this behavior.
Yeah, and that is something that not everyone who works at the university. Not everyone who works in social sciences and understands how human behavior works is super happy about. There's a professor who tweeted recently that they're a bit concerned that this very heavy-handed reaction threatening expulsion for students who disobey campus expectations is now going to cause students to be more non-compliant with contact tracers and fearful of getting tested. There is, some psychological research to suggest that this sort of top-down punitive approach is maybe not the best. There's evidence that we know that blaming people for public health interventions doesn't work, whether you're talking about sexually transmitted infections or drug use and drinking. But that's essentially the tactic that the university has taken. And they've also shifted the blame in their messaging from, the administrators who chose to bring tens of thousands of students back to campus to the students themselves for not behaving properly and not following the rules. And they haven't so far, my colleague Christine Herman has pressed university administrators on this issue of, do they accept any responsibility here for bringing these thousands of students back to this community? And so far, they haven't really.
Let me turn attention to Illinois State University. Dana Vollmer, you've been covering what's happening there. The numbers have been on the rise. What is the latest at ISU?
Yeah, so as Lee kind of alluded to, there are certain universities, if they're not doing frequent and mandated testing of everyone on campus, really only seeing the tip of the iceberg, and that's kind of the situation here at ISU. The university confirmed another 105 positive cases this morning, so we're now up to nearly 1,300 cases among students just in the first few weeks of classes. The testing positivity rate right now is sitting at 20%, so one in five students that got tested this week were positive for COVID-19. The challenge is that here at ISU, there is no testing requirements. We do have on-campus testing available to asymptomatic and symptomatic students, but again, it is not required. And so to date, since the start of the semester, we've only done about 6,300 tests, which is about less than a third of the students that are enrolled for the fall. So the numbers look bad, but it's also just kind of a small image of what could be happening in the campus community.
Dana, also at ISU, I thought most of the classes were going to be online, remote learning, at least in the beginning, or maybe much of this semester, but there still seems to be a lot of students there.
Yeah, so that was kind of a situation that evolved very close to the start of the semester. So we are at about 90% of classes are online. The only students that are in person are kids that are in lab classes that can't be facilitated online. So it's a very minimal number of students coming onto campus for classes, but we did have thousands of freshmen move into dorms. We had students that had already signed their lease a year in advance and couldn't get out of it, so they decided to come back. We had students that were just getting cabin fever at home with their parents and wanted to come back and kind of be back in the college mentality. So while they're not meeting in class, we don't have exact numbers, but it's thousands of students that have returned to campus, the university or the campus community largely, I suppose I should say. The university does say that about 80% of our positive cases have been in off-campus students. But again, we don't have clear figures on how many are back in Bloomington Normal.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, joined by Charlie Wheeler and our guests this week, Peter Medlin of WNIJ, Dana Vollmer with WGLT, and Lee Gaines with Illinois Newsroom. Peter, it's your turn, I guess. What's happening at Northern Illinois University?
Kind of similar to what Dana was just saying with Illinois State, NIU is doing just about, I want to say 80% classes online. So yeah, pretty much just the labs and things like that. They've only had 57 total positive cases at NIU thus far. And yesterday, I believe they hit their, largest single day total, which was, well, it's only 13, but earlier this week, they just started doing some more surveillance testing. So just randomly selecting about 125 students a day. And so that's people that live on campus, are taking classes in person, or are student athletes. And so that's, 125 a day out of a pool of about 3,000 students. And so we don't quite have the figures of, you know, I guess we'll start to see next week if that actually impacts positivity rates and what that looks like going forward. But right now, like I said, 57 cases total, and the single highest was yesterday at 13.
Now, Peter, I know you've reported on students having to follow these different rules that have been put in place. That's not why people go to college. People go to college to, you know, to learn, of course, but also to congregate, to get together. That's a hard thing to tell a student on a college campus, is that you can't get together with others.
Yeah, there's a huge personal responsibility part. I know that, like, NIU is like, they've, if you live in a dorm, they forbid you from having visitors. And you even have other examples at other colleges in Northern Illinois. Like if you take a smaller, you know, a smaller private school like Rockford University, where they, on the first several days of students being back on campus, had to quarantine 31 people for having a pickup basketball game and so where someone had exhibited symptoms, and nobody ended up testing positive, but it was quite a scare, like right as they had reopened campus. So yeah, there is a lot of it of having to ask these people to, having to ask students to, yeah, go by these rules, sign these pledges of, you know, I won't have anyone in my room, I'll wear a mask if I have to study with kids. And yeah, that's tough for someone that's independent for the first time in their life, right?
Lee, I heard from your reporting, somebody made a comment that there were two schools of thought going on among most of the students. One was A, they're going to get sent home anyway this year, this experiment won't work, or B, they feel invincible to the virus. So that's a problem for administrators when you're trying to deal with that type of mindset, right?
It definitely is. And I think that points to this issue of, like, is shaming these students really going to work if their thought processes are, like you said, one, this isn't really a big deal. I'm not really going to get it. No one's going to get sick. This sort of a sense of invincibility that I think a lot of, like, people in their late teens and early 20s have, myself probably included in that. You know, I think it is going to be interesting to see how the next 2 weeks play out, because now the university has imposed this sort of student lockdown where students are only supposed to be leaving their residences to go to classes, to go to work, to go grocery shopping, to get tested, of course, and then also to engage in individual outdoor activities. So I think one thing that professors at this university have pressed administrators to do more of is less shaming and a little bit more educating, and trying to engage with the students on campus and get them to buy into this thing that we're doing here, where we're doing a mass testing program, but that doesn't mean that you don't also have to wear a mask and socially distance. The idea being that if students feel consulted and like they're being heard, they might be more likely to comply with the rules and regulations set forth by the university. So, you know, Provost Andreas Kangalaris said recently in a call with faculty earlier this week that he wanted to do that over the next 2 weeks, to really engage these students, to talk to the leaders of fraternity and sorority houses and get them to buy into, you know, this whole program that the university has developed. Because I mean, now there's a lot at stake. And I think there's also a big question of, you know, if the university does decide to shut down, is that really going to solve the problem? We already have, you know, thousands of students who have returned here, some on campus, some off campus. And it's not like the university can force them out of, you know, a private off-campus residence. They can't force them out of the community. They're already here. There's some question that shutting down would actually be more harmful than helpful, because then maybe they wouldn't have access to the same testing resources. So it's kind of we've opened up a can of worms here, and it's unclear if the university loses control, what is actually going to happen, and what will be helpful here it's basically an open question at the moment.
Well, there's also the concern, Dana, of the fear of the spread to people on campus, but also you have college towns. There are people in these towns. They're worried, I think, as well about this getting out of hand and sweeping through the community. In Bloomington, Normal area around Illinois State University, there has been some changes, I know, put in place by local governments as far as trying to restrict people's movements and gatherings.
Absolutely. Yeah, we kind of experienced what a lot of communities, college communities, did for a while, where it was just a lot of finger pointing, where we saw cases among college students rising and wasn't really sure who was responsible for helping to get that trending back in the right direction, I should say. So last weekend, the town of Normal, where ISU's campus is located, put into place an emergency order that restricted gatherings to 25 or fewer around the campus community, including private residences, and everybody at those gatherings had to be masked. The other thing they did was to forbid bars from serving anyone who wasn't seated, which severely limited capacity, and also just anecdotally driving around town seemed to have kept a lot of kids from going out. The penalties could be tickets of up to $750, and then also there are threats to liquor license holders if they aren't obeying these rules. And so far, it seems to be working. A lot of the staple college bars weren't even open, and those that were pretty low capacity. And those rules, I should say, were also made permanent this week by City Council. In addition, they shut down the shuttle that is known for bringing college students to downtown Bloomington to go to clubs and bars.
Charlie, you're a professor emeritus now. You're not teaching, but that's something that has been a concern, faculty being concerned about the students being in the classroom with them or being on campus. It was going to spread to an older population. So I guess you picked a good time to retire.
Yeah, I guess I did. So that is a concern, because obviously the faculty is a lot older than the student body and therefore more likely to be affected by this. And it's difficult because on the one hand, you talk about, well, you don't want to be shaming the students. But on the other hand, as a professor, you hope that the people you're dealing with are adults. They're growing in to be adults, able to accept adult responsibilities. And so the fact that, well, I'm a kid and I want to go out and get drunk and you can't say anything about it, that kind of runs counter to that. And I think another problem that the universities have, and this would certainly be true at the U of I, if you decide to shut down and send the kids home, how can you do that at a place like Champaign, Urbana, where you have so many students who are there who are international students, and I'm guessing that probably some of their home countries don't want them back now that they've been to the United States.
Right, right. Well, let me, in the time we have left, turn to local schools, kindergarten through high school. This has also been a big concern, even part of the political debate. Most schools, according to the State Board of Education, are doing remote instruction, at least to start the fall semester. And Peter, I know that puts a lot of pressure on parents. You talked to some of those about how they're trying to balance teaching at home, probably in some cases working as well. How is that going for the people you've talked to?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, because it's, on one hand, a lot of these parents are, really nervous about if they had to send their kids back to school, but then also, having to rely on those places for not just education, but childcare. So yeah, starting off remotely has been a lot better than it was in the spring. I think in the spring, there was a sense of, and this is from educators too, that they were kind of putting the plan together while it was in the sky. So a lot of these parents are feeling like, even though in some cases, especially with young kids, pre-K, kindergarten, where you're, parents are trying to teach their kids kind of how to read and write, and they're like, I wasn't trained to know how to do that, that at least they're getting more pre-recorded videos. They're doing a lot of Zoom classes where people are, all the kids are there at the same time, which again, for kindergarten can be kind of a hot mess, but is working out better for kids that are a little bit older. So even though it can be a little stressful and it's obviously not anything close to perfect, I think that there's a sense that the planning is there and that teachers are being creative and it's going better than they expected so far.
Lee, I think most could agree that kids are better off in school, but if I had a school-age child right now, not sure I would want them back in the classroom. A lot of these schools are saying they want to take a month or two. Is that going to be enough time for them to change their minds on actually reopening these classrooms?
I mean, it's really unclear right now. So, you know, here in Champaign-Urbana, both the Champaign School District and the Urbana School District have opted to go totally remote for the first quarter. That is also true of the Decatur School District as well. But then we have districts, you know, around us in some of the more rural areas of this part of Illinois who are doing the hybrid model. So they're bringing students in for a shortened school day. They're having, you know, some students come in the morning, some students come in the afternoon. They're required to wear masks the whole time. They're supposedly washing their hands frequently. So it's kind of, you know, the State Board of Education has really left it up to districts to decide. Aside from offering 5 hours of instruction per day, you know, it's really up to these local districts to make that decision of, you know, do we want to stay all remote or do we want to do this hybrid model? I can't imagine any district right now, at least I haven't heard of any, that's just going back to the way things were pre-COVID. There's definitely some modifications taking place. But then the all remote learning, you know, as Peter mentioned, it brings up this issue of childcare.
All right. Well, it's time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, we're in the first week of a new month. So Professor J. Fred Geertz over at the University of Illinois' Institute of Government and Public Affairs came out with his Flash Index. And in August, the index actually increased to 94.6 from its 93.9 level in July. But of course, anything below 100 means the economy is not growing.
All right. Dana?
Well, I think it's worth noting that Illinois State University is now in the works of setting up saliva-based testing per the SHIELD Illinois program. It's going to be about 10 weeks before that's available, so it doesn't really help us all that much this semester. But once that's up and running, it would allow the university, they believe they should have the capacity to test all students once a week, if not twice, if capacity allows. In talking to the university administration, I am not yet sure if it will also include faculty and staff on campus. But once that's up and rolling, it should paint a much clearer picture about what's happening on ISU's campus.
Okay. Peter?
Yeah, something I just ran across was, and I just wrote a story about this week, was I had gotten some documents from the West Aurora School District, a bigger district in our area, where they had done some student surveys from students as young as kindergarten through fifth grade and asked them, how did you feel about school closures? And so we got to hear it. We don't often get to hear from kids that young in their own words of how they feel. And so I, shameless plug, I would definitely recommend checking that out to hear some of the quotes, because they are at both times, you know, hilarious and heartbreaking, some of the things about the way they feel about this.
And Lee.
Something that I'm keeping my eye on as we move further into September is attendance numbers for these school districts that have gone totally remote. How many students are they reaching on a daily basis? Who's going to school? And then additionally, you know, I've heard anecdotally from parents in this community that they have chosen to take a sabbatical, in a sense, take their kids out of school for the year, or maybe take their kids out of school indefinitely and move to a homeschooling model. And I think that brings into question a lot of the regulations or lack of regulations in Illinois with regard to homeschool. Honestly, it gives parents a lot of flexibility to choose what they want to do. And there are potentially a lot of pros and cons to that.
All right, that's all the time we have for State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Peter Medlin, Lee Gaines, and Dana Vollmer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.